everyone. This is Chris, and you're listening to the Live Fix Podcast, the podcast that explores the concert fan experience. We believe live music is life-altering. Join us as we share stories and connect with concert fans to discover how live music forever rocks our world before, during, and after the show. Thanks for listening, and enjoy the episode. Hey there, my fellow live music fans. Boy, are we excited to share this episode with you. You know, we do a lot of experimentation and, you know, exploration of the live music experience, and we have a very special guest that's going to be joining us, a party scientist, to be exact, Jacques Martiquet, who uses biohacking, human gathering experiments, crowd surfing therapy, you know, to help concert fans, artists, and event promoters, you know, make the live music experience more meaningful. Just a lot of great work that he's done, that he's going to be talking about. You know, to give you a little taste about what we're going to be exploring, you know, to give you an idea, you know, we're gonna dive into topics such as, you know, do certain substances such as drugs and alcohol make a show better or worse? You know, what is the connection between fear of having community? You know, do concert fans go to shows with the fear of being intimate, which is quite interesting to explore. And we're going to do just that. And we're going to look at the topic of, you know, showing off that we're at live shows and understanding whether or not does that propagate and promote reproduction. So Jacques has some thoughts on that, which are pretty entertaining and interesting to consider. You know, we're gonna look at, you know, do concert fans, you know, fear intimacy at concerts and social norming, you know, and really look at the idea of the male and female experience at live shows, and even dive into that unique burden that Jacques brings up about, you know, that women carry at concerts, you know, this unique burden that he brings up, which is very interesting. You're gonna want to listen into that one. You know, and also the concept of, you know, do we need to buy our way into community at concerts? You know, and does that lead to us being addicted to concerts and to festivals? You know, I don't know. Very, very interesting. You know, we're gonna look at, you know, how do we have as concert fans more intentional human connection at shows? You know, how do we break down some of those barriers? And, you know, what's standing between us and a really great show just beyond the music, right? You know, and we're going to look at, you know, are there certain musicians that, you know, are performing versus facilitating, you know, community and connection between fans? We're going to look at, you know, how do fans really build more community and get the most out of the concert experience through this thing called, what Jacques is going to explain, called the closer ritual, which is really fascinating. He's going to tell us why he does not bring his phone to shows, and he's also going to share some wishes that he has for the future of live music. And as far as bands and performances, you know, each show we get into, you know, the favorite episode or, you know, the favorite moments that a concert fan might have, and Jacques brings in some really great examples, even some things we've never talked about before, you know, like Tony Robbins and live music, which is again fascinating. Talking about BTS, Dan Deacon, Rez, and so much more. So, you know, overall, this was a pretty sweet episode. I can't wait to share this with you. I know you're really going to really enjoy, you know, having a blast listening to our chat with Jacques Martiquet, the party scientist. So here it is, and enjoy. Thanks for being here.
Eureka. Yeah, I'm on quite a mission related to the health benefits of human connection. And a lot of those benefits come from, yeah, when we come together, dance, sing, and liberate ourselves. And usually that happens late at night in like nightclubs, at concerts. So it's a very significant ritual in our culture that I think needs to be almost regarded as a health habit. So all that to say, hell yes, thank you for inviting me on.
Yeah, absolutely. And we want to start out by, telling a little bit more about what you do, because it's really, really fascinating work, what you do with audience members, festivals, events in general. We're huge concert fans, and I can surmise that you are a concert fan as well. And I know that there's so much to be experienced at a concert, and just all the things that go on. So tell us about your work and kind of how you got started in your journey.
Some of the best moments of my life have been being at the front of a massive concert and actually looking away from the musician and toward the crowd and just making eye contact with people and seeing their hands above their head and like their facial expression just wide. So that is one of my greatest highs. And speaking of natural highs, I help people get high through human connection. And so I use social neurochemistry, which means like healthy neurotransmitters. How do we release as many healthy neurotransmitters as possible? And I do that through leveraging dance, song, touch, play, and what I've been doing for the last 8 months has been traveling the world with a giant boombox and getting people to dance in public. But my greatest excitement is really leading workshops about this new way of gathering, and also helping companies like and organizations leverage social neurochemistry, leverage the science of human connection to create these massive mental health benefits of like that healthy neurotransmitter release, right? And yeah, how I got into it is I was actually a medic at concerts. Medical staff.
Oh, no kidding.
Wow.
Wow. Tell us more. Sounds
Yeah.
interesting. A medic.
Yeah, so like all my work is informed by public health. And so when I look at concerts, when I look at nightlife, when I look at music festivals, I'm really asking myself, like, how are these experiences impacting people's well-being, people's mental health? And so in my degree at the University of British Columbia, I did a bunch of public health courses on substance use and on like lifestyle. And I was actually involved in a group on the campus where I was educating people about like sexual mental health. And I learned a lot about like substances and how they relate to party culture. And that led me into becoming a medic at some of these giant festivals and EDM shows. And I would really see the more negative aspects of some of the social norms within party culture, within these festivals, and I would help young people who were experimenting with drugs. I'd help them calm down. I'd help them sometimes like I'd help them regain consciousness, regain their breathing. And it was really intense, and it led to this passion, like how do we socialize, how do we celebrate in a healthier way that includes more people and that unlocks these super healthy neurotransmitters, these benefits of human connection, right? And so I started like leading this sober partying company for a while, and since then it's kind of evolved a lot.
Very fascinating. Very fascinating. Now, when you went in to apply to be a medic, what did you think you were going to uncover all of this or see this?
Not as bad as I thought. I mean, when you're in the medical tent, like behind the main stage of a festival, you see the worst, right? Like I've seen the best and worst of party culture. I've led groups of people in huddles and sing-alongs. I've led crowd surf therapy sessions where like the whole group collaborates to safely crowd surf someone. Like I've seen people come alive and get high, right? High on life. And then what I've also seen is I've seen the violence. I've seen the extreme intoxication. I've seen people overdose on drugs. I've seen people not take care of each other. Like one time I was at this massive festival in British Columbia called Pemberton, and we got a radio call, and we're like driving around a golf cart, and we get this radio call that there's someone in the campgrounds, and we like ran through the campgrounds. We parked our golf cart, ran through the campgrounds, and we found this boy in the center of a group of people taking shots, and he was pretty much unconscious, and no one was doing anything to help him. So there's like a lot of work. That was pre-COVID, so maybe party culture has evolved a lot more, but there are still ways to improve how we socialize, how we celebrate.
And I suppose there's a quite a few people that go to shows just to interact with others, like even pre-COVID. Now, after COVID, I think there's some of that that goes on, but I'm sure there's quite a bit of people that are sitting at home and have some crummy, home lives or whatever, and think, man, I really just need that connection. So I'm just going to go to a show or go to a
Yeah.
festival.
And the question that I'm really interested in is how do we make these shows less about celebrity worship and more about community? And what I'm excited is for musicians and bands to actually foster community in the audience and really give people that strong sense of connection, because I think our deepest craving as humans is to feel fully, unconditionally accepted. And I think that's why people are so addicted to festivals, is because for once they feel so unconditionally accepted and they can express the super weird part of themselves, right? So, yes, I totally think that, the story that we're telling ourselves is like, oh, I'm going to a show to like, film my favorite musician, but really it's like that sense of connection with other fans. It's that unity that we experience in a crowd of people, and then we're just surrounded by super joyful expressed people. Like that's what music does, right? Like music is this powerful tool for unlocking everyone's inner joy and everyone's like full expression, right? And that's kind of my life's work is figuring out how to use music to do that.
And it's very interesting too when you brought that up. I thought right away about like tribal type music or tribal, tribal people getting together
Oh
and
yeah.
drums and how some of the dance music now is so repetitive, almost like a drum
Yeah.
circle.
Yeah, you're so right. I mean, I'm just recalling this experience that I had in Thailand in 2018, and I went to this like psytrance show, and psytrance is just so repetitive. I've also been to a bunch of drum circles, which are quite repetitive as well. And yeah, what happens with like that repetition is we can really synchronize as a group, and that synchrony of movement has neurochemical effects. So it actually releases endorphins, which is a social bonding neurotransmitter, and that creates a sense of closeness in a crowd of people. So I'm more of like a fan of variable music so that I can bring people up really high and then slow dance or whatever. But yeah, definitely that's what our ancestors did, like that's how we socially bonded. That's how they do it in Africa. Like in indigenous communities there, like the pygmy people. If you want to study human connection, YouTube the pygmy people. I know I might be mispronouncing it, but it's a pretty cool indigenous group.
Yeah, no, I think you're reminding me of a comment that you made of a research that was done back. I think you'd mentioned about the chimpanzees picking the fur off of the bugs out of their fur, and that, you know, that was the touch, and then how that evolved, you know, to now dance and singing. And I thought that was really, really interesting, because I often wonder, you know, what is the evolutionary purpose of live music? You know, because you could go to a show, you can feel connected, you're getting something personally, you know, you're paying money for that experience, you know, you're getting something from the band, you know, but I often wonder, you know, take away the money, take away, you know, the celebrity worship or whatever that might go on stage. And, you know, what about the evolutionary need, or, you know, just that kind of built-in hardwired DNA level, like, like desire to connect. And I was just wondering on your thoughts on that, as far as like where that is today, or, you know, kind of how that's evolved. Because it's
have just, we evolved? That's the question, I think. Have we?
Yeah.
I mean, you got different. You can go to a symphony show, right, and have experience. Or like you said, you could get drenched in a muddy mosh pit.
Yeah.
And everybody's going to have a different experience at a concert, but we're all the same species, you know, evolution. Like, but it has evolved so much that it was just something I was thinking about. And, you know, you have spent time thinking and studying on that as well. Just,
oh yeah,
what you thought about that?
Well, first of all, have you been in a mosh pit before?
Have I been in a mosh pit before?
Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay.
I got some scars.
Yeah. The mosh pit is a very interesting phenomena that, if facilitated in a controlled way, can be an extremely cathartic and bonding experience. So, not to get too into depth about...
There's a lot of touch involved.
Yes!
There's a lot of touch involved, for sure.
And synchrony.
I've been in a few myself, too.
Yeah, the problem is when, like, okay, so I was just in Barcelona, and there's this festival there. Everyone goes to the beach, lights off, fireworks. I showed up with my boombox. I had two batteries. I went through both batteries for the first time in my life. And at a certain point in the night, the blood alcohol content level, like the average blood alcohol content level, like any song that I put on, it just became a mosh pit. But, like, a violent, like, you know, aggressive mosh pit. So I'd have to shut off the music every time. So mosh pits done sober are super fun, super healthy, and playful. But back to your question, Chris, you know, I'll begin with, like, my positive view. I think music, and not even music, let's talk singing and let's talk dance. Singing and dance are different than live music. Oftentimes, live music facilitates singing and dance, but live music, like a musician or you know, it's not necessary for a group to actually create music together, right? A co-creative process. So dance and song are scalable, are social bonding technologies. So they enable us to scale social bonds in a group. So they're really technologies that we can use to bond large groups of people. And so from an evolutionary standpoint, song and dance help stabilize civilization, because we can create trust, we can create this oxytocin release, which is the social bonding neurotransmitter. We can create that with people that we don't even know intellectually. So I think that's the evolutionary purpose of music and dance. Now, I think live music, it's quite interesting, because if you go to a show, you'll see that most people are there just to show others that they are there. Like, there's kind of this element of showing off that you're at a live music show, showing off that you're at Coachella. So I think the evolutionary purpose for the show-offs is we want to be seen as being reproductively desirable. So if we were to get really nitty-gritty, it's like, people go to a lot of shows and they show off their lives to others because it benefits like the propagation of their genetic code. So those are my two thoughts. Getting into
And
reproduction here.
do you believe that that has changed because of social media and our ability to sort of like say, I was there and show that? Because I mean, if you look back at like the Beatles, I mean, people didn't have a lot of personal
Right.
devices or ability to capture those moments. They just live them, you know? And so I wonder if you talk to, because we've talked to some fans, we have a couple of shows coming up about fans that are older and have seen the Beatles and the Rolling Stones
Right.
when they were in their heyday, and they didn't have this ability to capture that. They probably talked about it when they came, got home for sure,
Yeah.
like, you know, I saw the Beatles and it was amazing and I screamed my head off or whatever. But I just wonder if that has really advanced us in a bad way as far as concerts go.
Yeah, really good point. You know, thinking back to what it was like before we could distract ourselves and show off our lives, 1% of our lives all the time. I think, I think people really went to live music shows for like artistic appreciation and for release, for kind of catharsis, and that's a term like for releasing stress and kind of getting out of the routine. Now, how it's changed is people are able to show off everything in their lives, and it's really convenient to do that, and it's really everyone's incentivized to do that because they gain social rewards when they do. And what I mean by social rewards is their friends comment on their story or their post and say, like, holy crap, like, your life is amazing. Like, I want to hang out with you more often. So there's this, like, social rapport benefit. How I think it's impacted concerts, I mean, my approach to socialization, I don't even bring my phone. Like, I don't have data on my phone, and I don't take my phone to parties. The quality of connection at an event goes up inversely with the number of people on their phones. So the less people who have their phones out, the more present moment aware people are, and so they can connect more deeply with people in their vicinity. So there's no doubt that people are going to be more in the moment and more connected. There's going to be more eye contact, there's going to be more touch if people are not holding things in their hands or staring at a digital or physical object. So that's something that I've learned in leading events and attending events, which are really mainstream and a lot of people are on their phones.
Yeah, and I'm wondering, like, what do you feel the artist or I mean, we know there's more behind an artist. There's a whole team of
Yeah.
people making decisions. What do you think they need to do to one, make it a better experience, but also to make an experience that is truly life-changing and really can impact that person's day-to-day life after they go to the show?
I think they need to make it less about them and make it more about the audience. And I think that's really hard because a lot of musicians, I don't know if they've done a lot of work on themselves. Like, you look at the mainstream musicians that young kids are listening to, and you listen to the lyrics, and the lyrics actively destroy consciousness in the youth, right? Like, you'll listen to some of these tracks, and there's no substance, you know? So I think, you know, first of all, having a message in one's music, having like a purpose that the musician communicates and relates and connects to their music. And then the other piece, I think, like, we need to become facilitators. Like, I am a facilitator. What that means is I guide the group through exercises that help them connect with one another and help them in their progress toward their goals. And so It's really like about interconnecting the audience and making less of a show and creating more of a shared communal experience.
So
and
it
that's
could
very
really
different.
happen. So it could really happen, like in between that downtime, you know, because we all know. I mean, we've gone to plenty of shows, and there is downtime in between the band coming
Totally.
on. Or let's say you're gonna go, I don't know, have a drink. You don't like any of the bands that are out there, so you gotta go get something to drink, and you gotta get something to eat. Like there's another total different area that where you're experiencing community in a different way. You know, similar to kind of like Lollapalooza or Coachella, some of these bigger festivals I'm thinking about, but you could do it on a smaller scale, but where you actually have an area that is community building and has maybe tents where you're doing other things that are maybe a little bit different than what is encouraged at the shows normally.
No, I love that. I mean, really capitalizing on this intermission period to get people connecting more meaningfully, not just small talk, not just talking about being a fan, right? Like, yes, being a fan together it creates so much connection. It creates unity in a crowd. But we want to, like, what I want to do when I'm leading a gathering or I'm on a main stage, I want to facilitate a level of vulnerability that fans have not experienced. I want people to share something personal. I want people to connect on a more emotional level. The second thing I'll mention is you mentioned like Coachella and these big festivals. Part of it is just like creating spaces where people can connect and like can actively engage. And in a lot of concert spaces, like people are watching and they're not necessarily engaged or participating. So I think it's super important, maybe there's another space within the concert where people can actually participate in something, whether that's play a game or whether that's, like play a game like We Aren't Really Strangers, right? My main critique, we're gonna get into this hopefully, is like if we want to have a really amazing transformational experience at a festival or concert, we're not gonna get that through watching. We're not gonna get that through sitting and watching. We're not gonna get that through filming. We're gonna get it through participating, by being fully interactive with our environment. So the interactivity is so important.
And it's interesting because the one thing that is strongly encouraged by advertisement or, you know, by other fans is to use a substance at a show because that's going to enhance it. But in reality, it really is just numbing every sense that they have, every extra ability or ability to even look over to your part. If you're that, you know, out of it, you're not even engaged with the person next to you. And so that's very interesting to me to hear you say that, because the one thing that I think is gets pushed on fans is drink, you know, get high, and you're gonna have this amazing, you're gonna have a different experience then. And sometimes the artists are on stage. I can't tell you how many shows I went to where the artists are using drugs on stage, so they're numbing out. I mean, I think the best case scenario is where the artist and the fans are connecting on a deeper level, and both of them are sober, or at least they're not numbed out.
Yeah,
I've heard.
I could talk about that for a long time, but what are your thoughts on that, Chris?
No, we're hitting on a topic that Colin and I have talked a long time about, and we haven't done any official experiments, but I have, written about this, and I'm super curious to get your take on it too, because not that you're getting, take a side on our arguments that we have between Colin and I, but I've often wondered that or if drugs or alcohol make a show better or make a show worse. Because you could
That's a
have
great question.
because if from the band perspective, the substance helps them relax and reduce the anxiety. I've heard artists say that before, talking about, why they do certain things because they're on stage and there's just so much anxiety that they need that to
Yeah.
perform, and that the fan doesn't, I mean, you can tell, if someone is so intoxicated that they can't even play the music.
Yeah.
That's one extreme, but on the other extreme, that they may be using some substance that allows them to create music that takes us as fans to that next level. So it's just there's that part, and then from the fan perspective, we've thought how a band a fan who might take drugs, whether it's alcohol, drug, whatever kind of drug, right? And it could drugs can make a good show bad or a bad show good, like
Yeah.
someone could, it could be a terrible show, but if someone's so intoxicated, they're like, oh yeah man, that was great, like and maybe the artist like hit the note, the chord, everything was off, but they just wanted to kind of get like the surface level of the experience, the roar, right? And they weren't really caring about like that the fact that the artist missed like five lines in their song, or
There might be a fear. There might be a fear
they
in the
skipped over that,
fans.
right? So it's just a super interesting topic, and I've always wanted to do like A B experiments and kind of send one fan completely sober, to the same two fans who love the same artist, send one sober, send one with tell them that, yeah, just have a couple beers or just get wasted, and then both come back, tell me how the show was, and just compare it, because I think there could be arguments made on both sides, which is the interesting part of the experiment. But from your perspective, where you advocate for just allowing people to be connected. And I've often wondered too, I think sometimes people, like, I don't know if they do want to be connected to each other, like when they're at the show, which is kind of a weird thought, like it's but then they do, because we'll reach out to fans at the show to talk to them about their experience and like solicit that from them. But
And
then
it might be an innate desire,
yeah.
but that doesn't mean that you're seeking that out, right? And so there's, I
Right.
think
I
there's
mean,
a, you
they
touched on,
wanna
when you talk about community, I think you also have to look at fear of having community. Having what we
Ah.
need. Sometimes there's a fear of having the things we exactly need in our lives,
Yeah.
right?
Vulnerability, right? I mean, Jacques, you mentioned, people wanting to be or not wanting to be vulnerable, and how substances can allow people to lower their inhibitions and some of their anxieties, where they are more open to connecting. Where if they go to a show sober, they might have, or maybe not. I don't know. I think everybody's different, but I've often feel that I'll look around at a crowd and be like, okay, that person just wants to be alone with the music, with themselves. And that is, but everybody is alone, but they're connected in their aloneness, right? Like they might not be physically connected, but they're intellectually connected. You could tell that, like when the band hits a chord, like everybody's like, yeah, but they may not be touching each other, but they're connected. So it's just all these different things. But I mean, those are some of the thoughts, to have. But what do you think? What are your thoughts on all that?
Oh my gosh, it's so nuanced, but it's a question that I think about a lot. I want to add to what you said, Colleen. I think people fear intimacy, and I think intimacy and vulnerability are related. And what I'm really excited about, and oftentimes intimacy is a very sexualized term, but what I mean by intimacy is just a sense of like real emotional contact and unmasked, unpretentious connection with another human. I really want to create more of that. And that's what I think, you mentioned it. It's like this innate need. We need that intimacy. We need to be fully accepted and celebrated and heard. And oftentimes, the phone is phones and alcohol destroy our ability to have these intimate connections because we just can't really pay attention anymore. And attention is so critical for these intimate connections. But when we look at substances, like I think it really depends. Like for me, I'm quite convinced that there's a sweet spot with alcohol, and specifically in terms of one's sense of belonging. So for the socially anxious, and by the way, we're all socially anxious. That's kind of an innate thing. Like we're all afraid of being ostracized and abandoned, right? For like the socially anxious, like alcohol may be really beneficial and it may really help them develop relationships. And for a lot of people, like two drinks is really helpful and it helps them be authentic and it helps them be more emotionally expressive. Now, when you have too much to drink, you can't be present. One cannot be present. A lot of people can't be present, and you can't really ask questions in an intentional way, and you don't get the nonverbal cues, so you're not sure like whether to touch people or whether people are comfortable with touch, right? Like one thing that I'm always asking myself is like how do I get people touching each other in consensual, comfortable ways at a party? Because the truth is, most of the health benefits of human connection come from touch. So I think of it in two ways. Like if you're at a show and you want to experience the music and you want to experience the musician and the lights, then there are substances out there that are going to really help you have an amazing experience. But it's a passive experience. You're watching a show. I don't really like the term show. Like I'm much more inspired by musicians who come up and they share poetry or they share a message or they get the audience connecting, or they're like Dan Deacon, who's this crazy guy. He jumps off the stage and gets into the crowd and he gets the crowd like huddling together, and it's incredible. It's like crowd technology. So if you want to just watch a show, then yeah, like take some substances that are going to amplify your sensations. But if you want to connect with other people, I'm convinced that like sobriety or a small dose of alcohol, depending on one's level of social anxiety, I think that is the approach. The last thing I'll say is literally, we got to consider all the alternatives to substances. Like for me, the alternative to a glass, to giving a crowd a drink, is literally get people in a huddle and play like the Lion King song. Like, doesn't often happen, but literally it warms people up. It's like the equivalent of giving people drinks. And so what I'm saying here is that there's so many ways that we can just lead people through an exercise to make them more pro-social and more playful. And it's way simpler than we think. And musicians often don't know how to do that. Musicians perform, they don't facilitate. And so what I'm excited about is like, well, how do we change this idea of a show and a concert, and how do we inspire musicians to become party scientists and actually get the crowd participating and engaging with one another, right?
That's very fascinating, and I'm wondering too. What are your thoughts on, because we've talked about this in past shows, a male's experience versus a female's experience in community?
Yeah. Oh man, I love it. Okay, well, I imagine
We know
it's
their
a set.
brains are very different. We know that. The research has gotten a chance to really
Totally.
examine brains and brain structures, and so we know they're very different. And so obviously at our core as humans, we could have this desire, innate desire for community. And I listened to your one of the podcasts you were on, and you said community is medicine. Yeah. And that's kind of been floating around in my head since I heard that. And I think that's very true. Mm-hmm. And I know for women in particular, having those connections with other women actually increases that feel good chemical in our bodies. Mm-hmm. We just mm-hmm. want more and more and more of that. It's almost like a drug in itself. And so that's why oftentimes we're like, we need to call our girlfriend, we need to call a friend, we need to, you know, now it's more texting, I think, but having those, or I need to go hang out with them, I need to have a girls night, I need to do that. And I think that that can play out, you know, at a lot of the live shows, a lot of the live concerts.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt that for both sexes, like, if we have a group of people at the event with whom we feel safe, like, physically safe. Like, you know, even if we're all fans, you know, I witness it as a medic. Like, there's people who are just a little crazy out there. And so when we're with a group of people that we trust, we can express ourselves so much more and take more risks, right? We can take more social risks. And I think that's more true for women. Like, I notice a lot of women are together in a group of women and they feel really safe there, and then like men are kind of a lot more lone wolf sort of style. And so I think, you know, I think like when I'm leading flash mobs across the world, it's often that like men will be the crazier ones in the beginning, and they'll like start, they'll jump into the line dance, and then women are mainly like in groups. Now, in terms of like the difference in the experience, I guess like what I have to say is this whole like mating dynamic, I think, has a huge impact on concerts. And I just want to like say that it must be really exhausting to always, like, for women just to always have to manage those expectations that they're giving other men. And I think it's different for men. Like, men are not getting approached, right? Women, on the other hand, they need to like make sure that they're not giving men signals that they're interested, right? So there's this kind of like management that needs to happen. And I'm relieved that I don't have to do that. And I honor women for being, you know, like kind of having that burden, because, you know, men approach women all the time, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah. What do you think? What's your take on that, Colleen? Like, what's been your experience?
Well, I do think that women tend to go to a show, to see the band, but there's more, I do believe there's just a lot of more emotion involved, and you know, before the show, and feeling like, you're right. Like, I mean, they're going to go there, unless it's a whole concert of just women, which is, it happens. I mean, there's a few shows you can go where it's just a bunch of women hanging out. I think that there's a whole nother element where, women feel like, they have to be on guard of, they can't fully always open up to what they maybe want to do, especially mm-hmm. if they're not drinking at all. I think when drinking comes in, it can kind of like, again, be a social like reliever.
I just want to contextualize this. What you're saying, I think, is like women almost are following social norms just a little bit more closely than men.
Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah, for sure. I would agree with that.
And we just think of that in terms of appearance too. I mean, like, women, there's so much pressure on women just to look a certain way, and like, and also just be nice and like be quiet, I guess. I think there's some social norming around that versus men, you know, can be these crazy hooligans, right? And then they go in the mosh pit, you know, like, we don't see a lot of women starting mosh pits.
Yes. And if you go into a mosh pit and you're a woman, I think it's like, oh, I'll let you have your little space over here. Whereas women really want to be part of that in the lines, right? And
totally.
That's interesting. And I remember I did not. I probably wouldn't do mosh pits now. Maybe if it was a little safer, maybe. But I remember when I was younger having that mindset of like, who cares? But being like one of the only women in there, and you know, it was a weird interaction with them, with the men in there, because you know the men wanted to. They want to be rough with other men, and like they want, you know, I was pushed over. I was hit with, back in the day, they had chain wallets. I was hit in the face.
Oh my gosh.
You know, it was brutal, but I want, you know, it's like part of me wanted that connection. I don't know that I wanted the like intense. I mean, I was not going to measure up to like the muscular men in the group. But I wanted that connection so bad. And I think if we're open to it, depending on how we approach a show and we attend a show, I think the world is totally open. Like, I really think anything can be open. But I think if you go into it, you know, thinking I'm just going to experience the show and go with my friend, like you're not allowing yourself to truly experience what is out there for you. And I think that's true in life, but I think because we're talking about live shows, I mean, you know, a lot what happens at shows is just a snapshot, right, of like what can happen in our day-to-day lives if we let it.
Or if we totally. Don't let it. If I mean, it. Like how we behave in a show, at a show, predicts probably a lot of our behaviors elsewhere. And the key insight that I want to draw from what you just said, I encapsulated in a quote. You can wait for fun to happen, or you can make it happen. You can be at a party, or you can be a party, right? And like so often, you know, people just go to a show with this mindset that they're going to be entertained. They are going to be entertained. Action to them versus them taking action to create magical experience, right? So like this difference in mindset, like I show up at a festival, I show up at a concert, and I am there as a creator. I am there to interact with people. I am there to enjoy my friends' company and ignite playfulness in myself and others, right? Now a lot of people are just waiting. Like they're just waiting for something fun to happen, and usually I'm the crazy guy who starts the fun, right?
Yeah, just as you were saying that, I was I had a very similar thought about, do we think because of all the, you know, the consumer mind, you know, or the passive entertainment opportunities that we have, you know, things that we do, activity, you know, sitting on our couch watching Netflix episode upon episode without engaging, you know, sports, you know, we sit in a chair, we watch sports play in front of us, you know, and then we go to a show and we kind of think that same thing. But as we're talking here, you know, it's like in what you just said there, people are waiting. And I often wonder, you know, will things, you know, shift, right? Will the pendulum swing the other way, and will it only take just a little nudge for people to go, wow, like, yeah, like, you know, like an artist gets up on stage and decides not to perform but to facilitate in interactions, and people get a taste of that. You know, it just seems like there's so much that we've been conditioned to go to a concert with a certain mindset or expectation in mind that is similar to going to a sports game or watching.
Yeah. Well, it's being a consumer.
You know? Yeah. And it's like, that's, it just feels like, and I'm wondering, you know, will we get to a point where people are like, okay, I want this. And all it will take is, you know, someone like yourself doing what you're doing at scale, or getting, you know, partnering with the right event, you know, concert, hosters or whatever, you know.
Maybe it's better you don't know who's going to be the artist. It's just like a big sign. Well, come dance. We're going to have a huge festival. There's dancing and great food.
This is huge.
And then you just throw in the artist at some point.
Yeah.
You do that. There's some, I don't know if you've heard those, Jacques, that the, I forget what they're called, but you pay a fee and then you know where it's going to be, but you don't know the artist until you get to the small little
Yeah, it's
house.
like a speakeasy or something.
And
Yeah.
I think that's interesting. And even, to go back to the gender conversation, you don't know who's going to be there, what the makeup is. 'Cause I've been at a show where I'm one of the only guys in the audience, and it's very interesting. And then, and then being at a show where, obviously I've never been in a situation, but I could think of, certain artists that maybe it's only got, the majority of men. And just what is that experience? And yeah, it's the whole gender thing is super interesting to think about. But I wonder
Here's
what people will need to have them push from passive to active,
Yeah.
and how can that change, the concert experience for fans? It's like that next, maybe it's that next phase for
Totally.
artists.
I think it's going to dramatically change the fan experience. And my actual intuition is that people think that they're going to watch a show and they're going for the musician, but what I really believe is that people feel most alive when they're connected to a large group of fully expressing people. And my intuition is that once we accept that what's more important for our bodies is to feel connected to a crowd of people and like come alive and liberate and have this ecstatic experience, it's no longer about the music. The music is the enabler. The music is there to enable the connection. And for me, like, that's what I do. That's why I have 3,000 songs and I have 150 playlists. The music is the facilitator of the connection. And I really think, like, if we want to make that step and we want to get people high off human connection and high off each other and create that like contact high, we need to redesign festivals. Like, we need to redesign the stage. Like, you look at a stage, everyone's facing one direction. They're literally looking at the back of each other's heads. That's not human connection. We need to redesign the stage, and we also need to redesign, well, like, what is a performer? What are we just here to watch someone sing songs, or are we here to jump up on stage with a musician, dance with them, and then go around, give out high fives and slow dance, and then like do a promenade and then do a kung fu battle? Like, that's, these are some of the things that I facilitate in all the countries that I go to, right? But here's the thing: the economy benefits from people who are just like watching, right? Because they're convinced that they need to like buy things, and there's essentially, once people start to get high off human connection, they buy less stuff and they buy less alcohol, and so it's problematic, right? Because they'll, like, all these companies that run concerts, like, they make money through alcohol, and if you have people getting high naturally, you're not gonna sell a lot of alcohol. And you're not gonna sell a lot of like merch even. Like, we will consume less.
Yeah,
I think
it's
that's
a
true. I think if you can find that connection just being who you are, I think you won't have to buy that shiny new thing, whatever that
Shiny,
is,
yeah.
to make those friends or be in a better light for people to come to attract people. Because I think that's
Yeah.
sometimes what we're told is like if we get that shiny purse, then we're going to attract more people that like those shiny purses. And that's the people we want. And so I think, and then that goes for shows too, because people wear all kinds of crazy outfits or they don't. I mean, just depending on the person. But I think if you could get to a point where community comes to you regardless of that shiny object, and you figure that out, I think you won't want that shiny object anymore. And that is a scary thing when you look at, the people who are selling or marketing that, for sure.
Yeah,
that's
I want to just add on that, Colleen. When we realize the greatest predictor of our sense of community is our relational skills and our emotional intelligence, then we realize we don't need to buy our way into community anymore. We realize that we have an infinite abundance of community and connection because we have the skills. We have the skills to be vulnerable. We have the confidence. We have the ability to listen attentively. We have the ability to make people feel validated and empowered. And this is the art of accessing the health benefits of human connection. And so I believe that once we have those skills and once we know how to do that, then suddenly we don't need to buy our way into community. And suddenly we don't even need to be into the same ideas, and like we don't need to sacrifice our values to have really connective experiences with others. We can just relate directly by being human, and by being vulnerable.
And this all sounds amazing. And I would say that one of my biggest, the band that I love the most is the Grateful Dead for many reasons. And I
Yes.
think that they figured out experiences. I mean, people were going and they were in hanging out in the parking lot. Like that's what they did the whole show, you know? And they
Yeah.
weren't even going in to see the main act. And the bands
Yeah.
encouraged that. I mean, the bands love that. There were songs about that. And so for you, is there another band or concert that you've been to that you can think they really like they've got something figured out and they've really were able to bring you to a place where you're connecting at a community level and you left feeling like you were just at the doctor's office and got a
Yeah.
big dose of medicine?
Yeah, 'cause you shared with us some concerts that were, your top five. And I'm
Yeah.
wondering if any of what Colleen's asking, fit into that, the Carnage or Res, Rise Festival, the ones that you mentioned.
Yeah.
Can you dive into those a little bit and tell us like why you listed on those in your top five? I assume some of those things are, those elements are in there, but can you take us through
Yeah,
any of
I
those
mean,
experiences?
ultimately, none of those experiences had to do with the musician or the band. Those experiences had to do with me facing discomfort and taking a huge social risk. And not failing and like facing the discomfort, jumping over it and making friends as a result of it. And it's hard for me to answer this question because you mentioned the Grateful Dead, and like I am not really a fan, right? Like I'm not really a fan of I mentioned I actually mentioned a non-musician, a non-band, right? I mentioned Tony Robbins, and I mentioned him because he amps people up so high, and he does it for a real purpose. He does it so that people can change their behavior and upgrade their minds, and he leverages this like concert vibe, but he amps it up so much more. Like you go to a Tony Robbins show, and it is more energetic than any concert that you will go to ever. And it's because like he's a facilitator. He is speaking to the audience. He's developing a relationship, and then he's getting the audience to synchronize, and he's making it safe for the audience to come alive and be liberated. And so I guess that would be one example. And then there's another example that I'll mention as well, and it's actually BTS. And I'm not a BTS fan, but what I've learned is that they have a Discord that is so active, and people will help each other with like doctor's bills, and they'll like get really, really personal. And it's like it's no longer about BTS at all. Like they're just all fans of BTS, but they're really connecting on a deeper level, and they're supporting each other emotionally, right?
Yeah, and that probably flows into the concert experience, I would imagine.
Yeah, I haven't
Thank
been
you for
to their
letting me
show.
know. Yeah, I haven't either. I mean, I just I can imagine that Because we have this this concept that kind of drives how we look at the live music experience on the show here, and we talk about the concerts change our lives before, during, and after the show. You know, you bring things into the show that affect the context of it. I think in the context of the BTS, they have those experiences leading up to that, and that the show is so full of not just the music and experience within that, you know, that 2 hours or whatever, that it's because they're making all these connections, you know, and
yeah,
there's a lot of examples. I won't go into those, but things that are more of a culmination, you know, or a consummation of what's happening before the, you know, before whatever event or act like happens. And I think that BTS, because I have heard about that their concerts are very charged, and hearing you talk about what they do in the community, you know, they're knit, and they bring that, sounds like they bring that into the show, and that they're artists, like you're saying, they're facilitating that among them, and seems to work for them. I don't know, other artists can't package that, or you know, do that same.
Yeah, thing. Yeah. I mean, I'm super interested to meet more musicians who are actual facilitators, as opposed to just performers, right? And that's there's a huge difference there, right? There's this idea of like, oh, I'm entertaining a crowd versus I'm engaging a crowd, and I'm helping the crowd unlock what's within them, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I mean, if you get get let's say a couple hundred people in a room, they're bringing their day into that room. They're bringing their history into that room. They're bringing their emotions. They're bringing, I don't know. They're bringing what they did that day as far as what they ate. And, it's, you know, did they yeah. talk to a friend before they got in? Did they have a bad meeting with their boss? Did they get yelled at by their child? Did they find out some bad news? I mean, they're bringing that into a show. And I think we often, you know, again, we do look at a show like it's the band that's giving to us. And I do, I think that's the wrong way of looking at it. I think the people who attend the shows are actually bringing you, they're handing you something. You know, what that is at the time is up to debate, but they're coming in with something. Maybe they each have a bag, right? Like symbolically, like a bag full of whatever. It could be good, it could be bad. And they're, you know, coming into the show and they're just dropping it in front of them and they're opening it up.
Maybe all of that, right?
Yeah.
So the facilitator would have to be kind of aware of that, and they would have to then bring their own bag of goodies, you know, and tricks.
yeah, for sure.
Would you suggest they would have multiple facilitators, or do you think a concert that has maybe, I don't know, I'm thinking of a small venue, you know, maybe has like a couple hundred attendees or fans. Do you think you just would need one facilitator? Or I know you've called them, what's it, biohackers? Am I saying that?
Yeah. Yeah. So biohacking.
Biosocial.
Social hacking. Yeah. I mean, you can have one facilitator on a stage attached to a giant sound system, or you could have a bunch of hosts throughout the concert floor who are making people feel welcome and who are engaging with the crowd and who are handing out, you know, props or something, right? I think though, like, all the musician needs to really do is like create like a unified moment where people actually look each other in the eyes and touch each other, and I think that would transform their show, right? So that's like my wish for the future of concerts, is that musicians leverage more party science, right, to unite their crowd and to create more positive relationships in their fan base.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, the vision that you have, I would love to see it, you know, furthered by different artists and fans. And as I think of the fans, I was I was wondering if you'd be willing to kind of give. I know we've been talking a lot about a lot of things kind of as we've gone along throughout this fantastic conversation, by the way. But what kind of tips or suggestions would you give to fans? Because I think we've talked about what kind of, what event orchestrators can do, artists we kind of talked about, and just to to wrap up, like what things would you suggest fans to do at their next show? They got show coming
To
up.
get the best experience of
Yeah,
their lives.
yeah. The best experience, exactly.
Okay, yeah. So, I mean, like, meditate a lot before you go to shows, 'cause that's gonna benefit your confidence. And so, like, aside from doing work on yourself and like journaling about your life so that you can become a better human every single day, I would say go to the event with someone who is more developed than you, who is more social than you, who is willing to take social risks. If you show up to a concert with a bunch of people who are just gonna record on their phones and drink a bunch of booze and they're not gonna do much, you're gonna basically have that experience with them. If you go to a show with really weird people who dress creatively and who roam around the concert floor and who ask really interesting questions to strangers, or who are just like more of like a hippie and like they hug for 10 seconds, let's say, like you're gonna have a better experience. And also, you're gonna be motivated to take more social risks. So there's a few social risks that I'd recommend you take. Like, I would dress more invitingly. Like, looking super good and looking super pretentious is not going to invite people to talk to you. What I do is I wear like this neon vibrant onesie and light up shoes, and everyone talks to me and feels safe talking to me. So it's so much more fun because people feel safe around me, right? So that'd be my first tip. And then if you want to go to the next level, start huddles. So like with your crew or like with random strangers, just start a huddle, and it's really fun to start huddles. And then the last thing is I would just basically have a pause in between you showing up and you like you making this decision to attend the concert and you arriving at the concert. Pause and just have a moment where you de like commit to forgetting about your responsibilities, your duties, like turn off your phone. Just like have a moment where you control alt delete everything else going on in your life so that you come fully in to the concert experience. Basically, make a commitment to yourself that you're going to be present and you're not going to deal with your emails. You're not going to try to reply to everyone on your phone. So have this kind of it's called a closure ritual. Like close off that part of your life and then come into the concert experience.
So maybe keep it in the car.
Yeah, I mean I would not bring your phone
In the
if you really
lockbox.
want to socialize.
Symbolically, you can put everything in the car and
Lockbox.
lock the door, and then that's it.
Yeah. I think actually though that's the greatest thing I'd recommend is don't have your phone on you.
Those are awesome tips. So you reminded me of one that about the dress and what you wear. And I've noticed that, I don't think you can bring pets to concerts, but I've noticed that if you're walking by yourself on a street or whatever, most people won't come up and talk to you. But if you're walking with a dog or a
Or a
cat
lizard, because we've done this. We do have a lizard
ferret
locked at the.
or a bearded dragon in a see-through backpack, just saying, that people come up and talk to you. And I think that's what you're getting at, right? With the dress,
Not only do you get them to talk to you, but you get them sometimes to have conversation and they open up.
Yeah.
It happens.
So I think we got to work with concert venues, Jacques, and get them to open up to bringing pets too,
Yeah.
and allowing that, because what you're saying with the dress, and what you wear, and you're spot on. Like, that's just, it's very interesting. We could do a whole show just on, what people wear to concerts and that whole spot. But fantastic tips, and it's, man, we could keep going on and on, I think, with this great
So
conversation.
I
And
think I'm going to try that at my counseling practice. I'm going to wear some really,
oh
really
yeah.
interesting outfits and suits. I do have one that's like an ink, it's like an ink blotter type looking suit, and I do get some response from that. So maybe I need to, I get more people to talk to me.
It's not only our appearance, but it's also just our demeanor. I mean, if we're trying to be super formal, if our dress code is super formal, well, what response are we going to get back? We're not going to get back people laughing and playing and being their like valuable human self. You're going to have someone who's trying to look good. When you have people trying to look good, it's not fun.
Good point. Good point.
Without fun, there's no community, right? I think that's
Yeah.
key.
Certainly part of my mantras.
Fantastic. Yeah, this is a great chat, and thank you so much for joining us, and love to have you back on sometime. But thank you for sharing. See, I told you'd have a good time with the party scientist, Jacques Martiquet. Jacques is up to a lot of interesting adventures, as you heard, and he's also looking to help you improve your events and, get more out of your live music experiences. So make sure to visit his website at thepartyscientist.com. You can also follow him on Instagram and Twitter. And if you need more info on all the stuff that we covered during the show, and we covered a ton of ground on research, bands, and all types of really cool topics, that we discussed. So make sure to check out the show notes at livefixpodcast.com for all that info, and we will catch you on the next episode. Live Fix Podcast is a production of Live Fix Media and is produced by Chris and Colleen Catania. Hey, we know every concert fan has a live music story to share, and we'd love to share yours in a future episode. So head on over to livefixpodcast.com and click on Share Your Story. We look forward to hearing from you. Like what you heard? Did you get inspired by the stories of your fellow concert fans? Then help support Live Fix Podcast by subscribing and sharing a review on iTunes or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. We appreciate your support, and thanks for listening.